we did bring in a load of smoke jumpers to do structure protection measures on those cabins. So we think they're pretty safe.
The interior sees its first sizable blaze of the season. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, June 4th. Good evening, I'm Laurie Townsend. Also tonight, how hard is it to get an electrician in Bethel?
I think it's not hard to get a hold of one. You see them in their trucks driving around. Now, to get them to come to your house and fix something, I think it might be rather difficult.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com. And by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com.
The interior's first substantial wildfire of the season was ignited by lightning last night outside Fairbanks. The Livingston Fire is estimated to have burned 167 acres, 15 miles southwest of town. Alaska Division of Forestry spokesman Tim Mowry says quick action was taken to protect private property.
The fire was moving towards the Tanana River. There were some cabins about a mile out in front of the fire. We did bring in a load of smoke jumpers to do structure protection measures on those cabins, so we think they're pretty safe.
Mowry says a major aerial attack helped corral the fire last night.
We had a retardant tanker here at Fairbanks, and it dropped several loads of retardant around, to sort of box in the perimeter of the fire so that crews get there on the ground and start constructing line around that fire.
About 80 people are working the Livingston Fire. A second lightning-caused wildfire was also reported Sunday night in remote areas farther to the south. The Fish Creek Fire is located in a limited suppression zone. Homer Representative Paul Seaton is taking a new route this election cycle. Seaton has represented House District 31 on the Kenai Peninsula as a Republican since 2002, but he filed to run as an independent in the Democratic primary last Thursday. This comes roughly 6 months after the state Republican Party unsuccessfully tried to block Seaton and two other House Republicans, Anchorage Representative Gabrielle Ledoux and Representative Louise Stutes of Kodiak, from the party's primary this year. The party argued it had the power to exclude the lawmakers because of a court decision that allowed independents to run in Democratic primaries. The State Division of Elections ultimately denied the party's request. Party leaders have targeted the lawmakers since they joined a bipartisan coalition made up of mostly Democrats in 2016, which took control of the House away from Republicans. The party also sanctioned Seaton and other lawmakers that year. Seaton is now taking advantage of the very same court decision Republicans tried to use against him. He is the only candidate to file for the Democratic primary so far. Sarah Vance of Homer, John Cox of Anchor Point, and Henry Kroll of Soldotna have all filed to run in the Republican primary. In Western Alaska, New Talk is in the process of leveraging federal funds to relocate the village. It's taken decades to find a solution. And in Juneau, a similar conversation is happening on a much smaller scale. A couple of homes are at risk of crumbling into a glacier-fed river. The neighborhood can't seem to agree as erosion gets worse. Who should pay for it? From Alaska's Energy Desk, Elizabeth Jenkins has the story.
At first glance, the neighborhood on Meanderway looks like any ordinary subdivision built in the 1980s. But there's a unique feature snaking along some of the homes' backyards.
Oh, there's more paddlers.
Hello! Welcome to Juneau.
No rain today.
For Joyce and Kirk Gehring, having the Mindenhall River right outside their door was a huge attraction. On their deck, they can see things they couldn't have imagined at their old home in Utah.
We have beavers going up and down the river almost every day. Sometimes we have harbor seals come up the river. I mean, it's a wonderland.
A wonderland that isn't as idyllic as it seems. Besides paddlers and seals, there's another sight visible from the Gehrings. Down the river, you can see a couple of homes that look dangerously close to the river's edge. The situation was alarming enough to catch the attention of a federal emergency watershed program. And for the past few years, the agency has been trying to develop a solution so the neighborhood could be placed on a priority funding list. That plan was to essentially build a large retention wall, big enough to protect 28 homes, including the Garings. It would cut off several feet of their beloved backyard.
So we'd have walked out our door to a fence.
Each homeowner would be responsible for paying up to $80,000 to build it. But that's not what the Garings say upset them the most about the plan. The vast majority of the money was to be spent from federal funds.
Just the absurdity of it all really fired us up.
Especially when you have all those people in California from the fires and the flooding and stuff,
yes. The
mudslides and all of that. That, in our opinion, is what government funds of that nature should go to.
The Garings say they knew the risks when they bought this property. River erosion isn't anything new. In fact, some of the homeowners who live on Meander Way built their own retention walls back in the 90s. But what they couldn't have expected was a surprise climatic event that would speed it up. 7 years ago, the Garings saw the river rise in a matter of hours. Water started seeping into their grass.
We were just standing there watching, going, wow, is this normal? And our neighbor over here said, no, it's not normal.
It was a huge mystery because it was July. It was sunny.
Aaron Hood is a professor of environmental science at the University of Alaska Southeast. And back in 2011, after receiving concerned calls from the city's emergency response coordinator, he boarded a helicopter to try to figure out what was going on. He flew above the Mendenhall Glacier, which feeds the river.
And you don't have to fly very far up before you see Suicide Basin. And as soon as we pulled the helicopter into the basin, you could see all these icebergs stranded. So it was very clear that it had been full of water.
That water used to be ice, flowing down from the Suicide Basin Glacier. But as that glacier retreated due to warming, it carved out a bowl.
That's why this area is flooding now, is because this basin is essentially a bathtub that can fill up with millions of gallons of water.
And that's bad news for the Meander Way neighborhood. Because once that water spills over, it flows under the Mendenhall Glacier and eventually floods into the river. It's happened every summer since 2011, with some years being worse than others. Still, Hood says this type of event could go on for decades, and it's possible the flooding itself could become more severe.
All that is sloughing off to see where the rock is falling and the lawn starts sagging.
Nico Buss has lived on Meander Way for about 30 years, almost as long as the neighborhood has been around. Lately, he's been playing the role of community organizer, knocking on doors, trying to get everyone to reach an agreement so the neighborhood could get some kind of uniform fix for the river erosion. He says the federal plan to build a giant retention wall between the river and the homes wasn't perfect, but it was better than the alternative.
Without it, your backyard is going to be gone completely.
Buss wasn't able to drum up enough support in all 28 houses along the river. And with the neighborhood divided, the Juneau Assembly decided it didn't want to force the issue and facilitate the federal funds. Buss says his backyard isn't bad off. He's done his own work to try to secure a barrier. But when he sees the river inching closer to his neighbor's home, just a few doors down, he wonders if that's his future.
Could happen this year. If it cuts under the foundation, the house is going to go like that. For these two houses that are just right here. And then whether or not mine house goes, you know. So you will get a signal. So when you see it would happen, then obviously you get your most valuable items out and get somewhere else.
Kurt and Joyce Garing, the couple from before, agree with Buss that something should be done about the neighborhood erosion, but not at the expense of millions of dollars of taxpayer money. The Garings have considered contributing to some kind of community nonprofit, the idea being the most vulnerable homes would pitch in more. And someday, they could all fix the erosion problem together, as neighbors. But Joyce Garing says now she's just ready to move on.
I don't care if their houses go down the river at this point. I am just done. We're responsible for this little slice of heaven, and that's what I'm concerned with right now.
But the Garings are looking to share their little slice of heaven with someone else. They're listing their home for sale this summer on the market. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a beloved Yupik elder and radio host has passed.
I'm trying to pass on what the elders taught to me by my actions what I learned from them.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
The University of Alaska Board of Regents is delaying a decision on whether to approve the plan for a Chilkat Valley timber sale. The board was set to approve the development and disposal plan for a major Haynes area timber project at a meeting last Thursday. Instead, Regents voted to defer consideration until a special meeting later this month. The decision comes amid concerns from Regents and the public and a desire for more time to work through those questions. UA announced the negotiated sale in March. It's aiming to harvest 150 million board feet from 13,000 acres over a 10-year period. The area identified for potential harvest is scattered throughout the Haynes borough. At a Facilities and Land Management Committee meeting earlier this month, Regent Joe Heckman questioned the amount of information available for the board.
When you say, yes, that is, the brevity of the document mm-hmm. is because that is how it's defined in our policy.
Well, that's the...
I know. So are we real proud of that policy? I mean, you know, we're checking the box. I'm just trying to understand.
Sure.
That I know you're justifying it the best way that you have.
Mm-hmm.
That here is the definition and here is how we are providing the information, but flip it on the other side and put yourself in our shoes when we're not getting what we think we should be getting.
The university has said more information won't be available until further along in the negotiation process. At the special meeting, Regents will receive a presentation from the university with a summary of public comments, more details about the plan, and a set of guiding principles for the project. That meeting is scheduled for June 19th. A recent letter from the Alaska Village Electric Cooperative startled residents in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. The letter told customers to repair their electric equipment by August or have their power cut off. While most of the repairs are minor, others require more professional handling from an electrician, which are scarce in the region. From Alaska's Energy Desk, Christy Schallenberger reports from Bethel.
So I just got done attaching two brackets to the masts. That was one of the things that in my letter was missing, was that my mast was not secure enough to be up to code for safety.
That's Jeremy Osborne, who works with Utlanarvit, a workforce development organization in Bethel. He also works part-time as a copy editor at KYUK. He's one of 450 customers in Bethel who got the letter from AVIC.
I was a little alarmed because they say that your electrical service will be disconnected on or about August 15th unless you make the repairs.
AVIC took over control from the local utility, Bethel Utility Corporation, in 2013. And residents have been receiving these letters since then, according to the utility. The utility recommends residents hire an electrician to do the work. But in Bethel, that is not easy.
If I were to call an electrician today, how long do you think it would take to get them out to my house?
It varies, but I would say up to probably about 30 days.
Michael Langley has co-owned a store called The Lumberyard for about 20 years. The store stocks the electrical supplies people in Bethel may need for repairs. He says he's seen an uptick in people coming into his store for the past 2 years for these supplies.
Well, we carry everything top to bottom for meter mains, masts, everything you need.
Bethel has long nurtured a do-it-yourself culture because of its remote location and lack of services, which may have sparked some of the letters. But AVAC CEO Mura Kohler says the repairs are not just confined to older homes or the result of do-it-yourself jobs. Homes and businesses can fail to meet code because of shifting permafrost, windstorms, or other natural causes. Kohler says most of the repairs are minor. She says many just require replacing a ground rod or other repairs people can do themselves. But what happens when they need an electrician? Kathy Hansen is another homeowner who received the AVAC letter. She says the easy part is tracking them down.
I think it's not hard to get a hold of one. You see them in their trucks driving around. Now, to get them to come to your house and fix something, I think it might be rather difficult because they have lots of work.
KYUK tried to reach out to several electricians that were listed online or given through word of mouth. Out of the five that KYUK tried to call, only one, Sea Lion Electric Service, had a working phone number, and they never picked up. KYUK also drove around Bethel for about an hour to look for one of the vans, but we couldn't find one. Homeowner Jeremy Osborne consulted with an electrician who's also a friend, but then decided to do the work himself. He says he's lucky he doesn't have to do more to bring his house up to code.
And the list that they give you of repairs, until I noticed that I only had two boxes checked, I mean, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13 different things that you could have to replace. Luckily for me, the things I have to replace are relatively minor. But if I had to replace the whole mast or get somebody to rerun the mast or put in a new box, then I would imagine it could be, you know, up to $1,000, if not more.
Avex Kohler says a utility doesn't require the repairs to be made by an electrician, but she advises homeowners who might not feel up to task to hire a professional, if they can find one. From Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Christy Schallenberger.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting. Opioids are sometimes prescribed for pain. Common opioids include hydrocodone, oxycodone, morphine, fentanyl, and codeine. Never share your opioids with family, friends, or anyone at all. It may cause addiction, trouble with the law, overdose, and death. Always securely store your opioids away from children and others who may misuse them. Learn more about opioid safety at opioids.alaska.gov. This message brought to you by the State of Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
It is a sad day at KYUK, and really for all of us in the Alaska Public Broadcasting System. Our friend, Yupik storyteller, culture bearer, translator, and longtime KYUK radio and TV host John Active died this morning at age 69. John is irreplaceable. His broadcasting career at KYUK began in the early 1970s, and he's celebrated as a pioneer in Native media for his work spreading and preserving the Yupik language and culture. From Bethel, Anna Rose MacArthur has more.
Over the decades, John produced a range of programs to entertain the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta and to share his deep knowledge and love of Yupik ways. John helped produce the television show Waves of Wisdom, where he traveled with the late Alexi Isaac around the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta, recording the oral histories of elders. John produced Tales of the Tundra, a TV show to stand your hair on end with Yupik ghost stories and tales of the paranormal. He hosted a Thursday morning Yupik language radio talk show where listeners across the YK Delta called in to discuss the topics of the day. Teachers invited John into their classrooms to tell traditional stories and his own adventures, like this one, about going to spring camp with his family as a young boy.
We learned how to snare ptarmigan on the tundra. We learned about gathering edible plants and which ones were poisonous. We learned which and what kinds of birds were around us by their calls. We learned everything about the Yupik subsistence lifestyle that we would never have learned in school.
When John was telling a story, time slowed down, and no one could look away. More invitations came from further away. He traveled as far as Boston and Hawaii, sharing his knowledge and always telling his stories. But he loved being in the YK Delta the best. Hawaii, he would say, shaking his head, was too hot. And in Boston, he'd say, making a face, they eat bugs, lobsters. John frequently appeared on PBS and NPR. Anthropologist Anne Finup Reardon and Marie Mead turned to him as they documented the Yupik culture and their long canon of books on the region. For decades, John's unique, gentle voice has guided visitors through the Anchorage Museum. John was a master of the Yupik language in its various dialects, a skill he attributes to his grandmother, Maggie Lind. He was one of the first people to translate the KYUK English language newscast into Yupik. He shared the story of his first day translating with former KYUK news director Rhonda McBride on her TV show Frontiers in 2015.
I love to watch people do news. And so I kind of fit in right away, and it was really easy for me. But the first time I was really nervous and just sweating away and But somebody told me, just imagine that your listeners, they're doing, walking around at home with no clothes, and you're watching them.
John became an accomplished translator. Holding the English news copy in his hands, he would read the words with his eyes in English while simultaneously translating aloud into Yupik. John could also translate live events in real time. It's a skill shared by only about a dozen people in the region, and his quality was matched by few. Many organizations sought John out and hired him for his ability. John loved to cook and to share what he made. Multiple times a week, he'd take over the KYUK kitchen and keep the staff and visitors well-fed with subsistence foods like goose, moose, and salmon. It was common to find fish in the sink, an entire beaver under the table, or a whole duck, feathers, beak, and all in the station's refrigerator. People shared these foods with John, and he shared them with everyone else. He loved sprinkling his dishes with dried green parsley and leaving a note above the food saying it was marijuana. John found humor in many things. He was always joking, always making us laugh, and laughing at his own jokes with us. For staff hired outside Alaska, he served as our cultural guide, ready to explain Yupik concepts and patiently pronouncing the same Yupik words again and again to train our ears and throats before we went on air. In late March, after experiencing a series of strokes, John announced his retirement. He'd made this announcement before and always returned, but we held a potluck anyway. Before we ate, John stood up to address the room. It was filled with friends and KYUK staff and board members.
Everything that I do today and on the radio, try to make people laugh, make them comfortable, is I'm trying to pass on what the elders taught to me by my actions, what I learned from them. Koyana.
Koyana, John. Remembering John active in Bethel, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
If you're living in Fairbanks and you lose your housing, the Fairbanks Rescue Mission is there to invite you in. But they don't want you to stay forever. They're implementing a plan to keep people safe, productive, and moving out and up. Alaska Public Media Solution Desk reporter Ann Hillman learned about their strategy for reminding people that they have the strength to make it on their own.
When Linda Baker moved from Minto to Fairbanks a few months ago, she didn't expect to end up in a homeless shelter. Who does?
Well, things just kind of fell apart. We were going to come up here, me and my son, to work, and just life got in the way.
Their housing fell through. Their car broke down. She landed at the Fairbanks Rescue Mission, a sober facility that offers emergency housing, food, and showers. It's a nice place. People chat companionably in clean, well-lit rooms. They have warm beds and hot coffee.
And it's safe here. It is really safe.
For Linda and for hundreds of others over the years, being at the mission felt great, which is part of the problem. Some people would come to the mission and never leave. So a couple of years ago, the staff, many of whom had been homeless themselves, started complaining.
Everyone was just kind of like, I don't want to come here every day and see people like regressing or stuck. I want to see people moving forward.
Brenda McFarlane is the mission's transitional program coordinator. She said morale among staff was down. People could stay there indefinitely, so some never made plans to leave. They worked in the summer, spent the winters at the mission. The staff decided that if they really wanted to help people move on and find stability, the clients needed deadlines, structure, and more support. A new program was born. Rodney Gaskins, the executive director, says now when people enter the rescue mission, they're given a clear message.
Your stay at the rescue mission is temporary. Our goal is to add value to you and send you back into the community. Don't waste the time because you're going to be moving.
They created the 30-60-90 program. Within the first 30 days of the program, people have to complete four tasks: register with a statewide job search tool, apply for public assistance, apply for public housing, and get a tuberculosis test. The next step lasts 60 days. Case managers help participants look for jobs and stay healthy. Rodney says they hold people to high standards and provide guidance to help them accomplish tasks on their own. When someone is struggling, he and Brenda tag team the motivational talks. She plays the tough love role. For the solutions woman, I'm Ann Hill. When Linda... When Linda Baker moved from Minto a few months ago, she didn't expect to end up in a
Things just kind of fell apart. We were going to come up here, me and my son, to work, and
In case you missed it, Rodney's positive take is that we're all on a journey. It's a process, etc., etc. Together, they try to get people to the last 90 days when participants work on saving money and transitioning into permanent housing. They also take classes on how to be a good renter and how to handle grief, anger, and trauma. Along the way, participants come together for weekly meetings to talk about upcoming community events, share advice on job hunting, and discuss challenges such as transportation for people working the night shift. They celebrate the small successes. At a recent meeting, Linda received a certificate for finishing the first four tasks.
First one is Linda Baker.
Since the program began in July of 2016, 300 people have earned certificates. About 170 have received case management. People who didn't participate in the 30-60-90 program or other shelter programs were asked to leave the shelter once they hit their 30-day per year limit. Rodney says they don't have hard data about how successful the program has been because most people never come back to the mission to give updates. They have anecdotal evidence that people are moving on, and participants do say it helps. Linda's only been at the shelter a few weeks, and she says having to complete a set of tasks gave her the structure she needed when she felt lost.
Because, you know, like, I never would have thought of having a deadline to go to Alaska Housing, go to the job service, because you kind of lose yourself, kind of drown in yourself.
Now she's looking for jobs in kitchens and trying to learn computer skills so she can find less physical work as she ages. She says people at the mission remind her that she does have the strength to stand on her own and move on, one little step at a time. I'm Ann Hillman.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org/news. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross and Ann Hillman in Fairbanks, Aaron Bolton in Homer, Christy Schallenberger and Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Abby Collins in Haynes, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Raven Alaska. Raven now provides Alaskans with the Day Over, a 24-hour stop in any major hub along the way to a destination, including Anchorage, Kotzebue, and Bethel. More information at ravendayover.com. Each semester, undergraduate students at UAA are learning through hands-on research experiences that take them outside the classroom. Working alongside faculty and professionals in the field, students have used their research to begin exciting careers, to secure patents for their inventions, and to earn national academic accolades. Amazing stories are being written every day at UAA. More at uaa.alaska.edu/admissions. This message sponsored by UAA. The Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education offers the Alaska Supplemental Education Loan for students attending most college or training programs in or outside Alaska. And it offers interest rates lower than the Federal Plus. For more information, call 1-800-441-2962 or visit acpe.alaska.gov/radio. This message sponsored by the Alaska Commission on Postsecondary Education, Alaska's higher education state agency. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.